The elders have seen fit that to allow me to give you a report on the work we did when we went to Beaumont, Texas. First thing I want to do is tell you a little bit about the church in Beaumont, Texas, Dowland Road Church of Christ. That's not the only church in Beaumont. It's a fairly good-sized city. But Dowland Road is one of the major roads that kind of runs through the center of Beaumont. There's about 400 members at this congregation. Another thing that shows you about this church, they got 11 elders and they got 12 deacons. So there's a lot of workers in that church. And this bulletin I have has a listing of the families that were affected by the hurricane and flood. What's listed in here is 36 flooded houses of the members there. There's 36. Now, more was added to this list later. There was about four said they didn't need any help, and then I think they decided they needed some help. And I think they were helping some other people that wasn't members also at this church. I was impressed. They had three evangelists there. Max Dawson, I think a few people here know him. He preaches there. He's kind of semi-retired, but he's also an elder there. And he's the one I delivered the check that we sent down there to him. So I'm kind of in, chronological order here of the trip. We left on Tuesday the 12th out of Bowling Green. But that night, Pax had called me Monday night, and he was talking. He said there was a gentleman that would like to follow me down. Ernie was his name. His last name was German, and I forgot it. I didn't know how to pronounce it anyway. Anyway, Ernie. And how that came about, he broke down around Franklin, and he was down there, and he went to church in Franklin. And that's how Pax got involved there, and he worked on his car down there. He had a CV axle go out on this little Volkswagen Golf. Of course, if you'd seen his car, you would know why. It looked like it was on its last leg, but it run, you know. But he's from Waco, Texas, and he'd been in Pennsylvania. He has a farm up there, and he'd been up there working on a house or something up there. And when this hurricane hit, you know, he decided, you know, I'm getting my car and I'm going to Beaumont. So he met us at the Franklin exit and followed us down. I was kind of glad of that because he followed us in a little car. And, you know, if I wanted to change lanes with the big trailer I was pulling, you know, I'd put my blinker on and he'd get over. And I knew I could just get over without any problem because he was right behind me. And he's a member of the church. And I assume in Waco. I didn't ask him where, but I knew he's a member of the church. But he said he's from Waco. Anyway, he followed us down, and we left on the 12th, and we got into Marshall that evening. I expected to be in there around, 5 or 6 o'clock, but it rained on us all the way, and they were doing construction work on 40 between Jackson and Memphis, so traffic was really slow there. So we got into Marshall about, it was around 8 o'clock. So we got a good night's sleep. The next morning, I went to Lowe's in Marshall because I talked to DJ Bean, was one coordinating the work this week that we were going down there. And he said they could not get any R13 insulation to put in houses with the 2x4 studs in Beaumont. Because Beaumont had shortages. when we was down there, the hardwares were starting to get a lot of stuff in. They were, you know, I guess like Lowe's and Home Depot and stuff were sending extra stuff there. So it was getting better. But they went down there, they still didn't have any of this R13 insulation. So I bought two pallets of the R13 and put on the trailer. And we headed on down after we loaded up that morning towards Beaumont. And, you know, every once in a while I'd look behind and I'd comment to the wife. I'd say, Ernie's still behind us. You know, I'd look back there and I'd see that little gray Volkswagen Golf. Well, we fueled up in Jasper, Texas, which is about an hour above Beaumont. So when I pulled out, you know, Ernie got fuel there and pulled out. And after a while, I looked behind there and I said, oh, no, Ernie's not behind us. So I got a hold of him on the phone, and he said his clutch cable broke on the car. So I you know, done talked to the people in Beaumont about unloading, and I had to go unload this insulation, and, you know, they estimated what time I'd be in there. So I told Ernie, I said, I'll call you when we get unloaded, and if I need to, I'll come back and get you. So we went on to Beaumont, Texas. And the first stop was to unload this insulation, since it was in the back on the supplies that we sent down there. So we went to a body shop. They gave me the address of it, and a guy met me there named Calvin. He was just an employee. He was a member of the church, but he was an employee of this David Finner, which is a deacon at the Dowling Church of Christ there. So I unload the insulation. And then our next stop was going out of there and going up Dowling Road and to the church. And we pulled in there, and there was all kind of people there to help us unload. We got that trailer unloaded in just a little bit. There were a lot of workers there, and they had, it was very well organized, too. They had all the classrooms set up at that time. You know, here goes, you know, food. You know, different supplies of the different needs. You know, one room was for baby items and personal items. So forth. But they had that, and there was a lady there coordinating all that to distribute who needed it. But she was coordinating, you know, which went where and whatever. And we got unloaded, and we went to Kathy Riley's house, which is the lady we stayed with, and got cleaned up and went to services that night. Now, Kathy had lost her husband. I think he was only 54 when he died of cancer. So she's a widow lady. She doesn't live very far from the church. Very gracious lady. I think her husband, his name was Pat, I believe, and he was an elder at this congregation, but he passed away at the age of 54, there in Beaumont. So we went to services that night, and they didn't have classes that night because all this stuff was in these rooms. So they had preaching that night. And one of the evangelists, the youngest one there, Benjamin Lee, preached. Very good lesson. And they announced that night, you know, if you have need of some of these supplies and stuff, you know, we'd like for you to go to the classrooms, get what you need, and if anybody needs anything, you know. And they done that. And then the lady coordinating all that stuff had workers come down. They got the stuff resituated around for Sunday so they could have classes. So on Thursday was my first work day. Went to this house on Pollard Street. And the family that owned the house or whatever, they wasn't there. But DJ had texted me and coordinated me with the address, got there. And it was just a complete gut. Sheetrock, insulation, fixtures, dishwasher, you know, bathroom fixtures, all the thing out. And the insulation was wet. Sheetrock, you know, was wet down low. But you got to get all this stuff cleaned out so the mold doesn't take over, because it's really nasty when the mold gets in there. But this lady, or there was a lady there, I think was a relation to the guy that owned the house, and she was working there with us. And I don't know if she was a member or not, but she was working there and just getting this stuff out. And what really helped his house, they got all the personal items out as soon as they could. You know, the couches, all the personal items like that, the couches and chairs and all that stuff. So, and they had the windows open. So everything they could get out, it wasn't, you know, nailed down or a fixture in there, they got out. And that really helped, because there wasn't any mold starting on this stuff yet. But it would have, because all that insulation was wet in there. And this house wasn't a real big house, but it was in a, let's see if I'm getting my directions right here. It'd be on the east side of Beaumont. And it was built on stilts. It had, it was probably 16 by 16 treated square, like you'd use for a post or something, only the house sit on this. And it was probably 3 feet off the ground. But there was still 6 foot of water went through that house. So, you know, there's 9 feet right there at this bayou that went through this house. You could look at the ceiling, and this house had just been redone or remodeled about 3 years before this. The ceiling was just as nice and clean and bright. You know, light fixtures looked great. But you come down to that water level, it was, you know, nasty from all the flood water that went through there. We started that morning, oh, I don't know, it might have been around 8 o'clock, and by about 12:30, we had this house cleaned out, except for the flooring that they was going to take up. And it wasn't tile there, it was either a vinyl or laminated type flooring, but you had to get that out. And this first day, Yuri was there when I got there, and then Roman came later that morning. They sent him somewhere to fix a roof on a house. And when I got going down there about Lumberton, before I started seeing damage, and it wasn't really a lot of what I call wind damage from that hurricane. You know, seen a few light poles and things like that, and signs and things like that, but as far as roof damage, I figured there'd be a lot of roof damage, and there were some, but not like, it was all this water that they got from this rain had from Lumberton, Vider, Orange, and over through Crosby, and of course Houston, and Beaumont. Anyway, we got all that out and left about 12:30. Then we went across town. It'd be on the west side of Beaumont and on Route 105, I believe. But anyway, we went to a house that the Geyers lived in. Now, this family here lived in a kind of like, I guess you'd call it, wasn't really a housing development, but there was a lot of houses on this road. And there was three from that family there. The parents, their grandparents, I guess you say, if you start from the youngest. The grandparents were there. This guy met his dad, lived there, and he also lived there in that same area. All three of them houses. When we were working on the Gallier house, there was a crew showed up from, where was they from? Portland, Oregon. They showed up from Portland, Oregon. Pretty good-sized crew. You know, that's 2,000-some miles that they drove to get there from Portland, Oregon. And they had their tools and stuff with them. They'd brought a box van, too, had tools with them ready to go. So they sent him across the road to be the grandparents' house. And I was working in the fellow's house here. And that house they'd already started on. All the sheetrock and insulation was out, but it was pulling nails and everything, then back in a garage section, the walls there wasn't sheetrock. They were some kind of paneling. But we had to tear all that out, get the insulation out there, so all that would dry. And the thing, too, to get that out and get drying, the main reason is for that. They got to spray, I guess by regulations. FEMA has a lot of regulations if you ever dealt with them. Some things you can do, some things you can't do, and sometimes they won't even let you build back where your place is. And people were going through that. But the thing about getting all this out and dried, they got what moisture meters. I don't know if anybody's seen moisture meters. Anyway, it's a thing, and it's digital, and they stick it on the tube before the wood to check it. And the moisture has to be down 2.25 or something like that before they want you to put anything back. And then before you do that, you got to prep that for mold. And you can do it yourself. But as far as insurance and liability and so forth, they were trying to get everybody's house done by a professional. And it's essentially $500 a house to come in and spray this mold preventive. It's got a name. And you can't even be in the house for 24 hours. That's how stout this stuff is. So you can't be in the house for 24 hours. But you need to do that before you go back in and start putting back insulation, sheetrock, and so forth. And by about 4:30 that evening, I was pretty well done. I was wore out. So that was on Thursday. And on Friday, went to a fellow's house on that same side of town. It'd be the west side of Beaumont. And Mike had come in Thursday night, and he stayed at Kathy Rowley's house also. And he'd been to Crosby. On the way down, he picked up sheetrock, I think he said, in Texarkana, I believe. But anyway, he picked up a load of sheetrock, and he delivered that into Crosby and another family there that, you know, lost pretty much everything. And then Thursday night, he was over in Beaumont at Kathy Rowley's house. So Friday, he went with me to work, and we worked at a fellow's house named Alan and Sarah Davis. And it was just nothing but this house. I don't think it had any floor in it other than slate and tile. Now, I did have it upstairs. I never went upstairs. They might have had carpet or something up there. But a lot of those houses down there had slate or tile floors. And if you've ever took that up, it's sledgehammer and bars and everything else like that. So me and Mike was on a sledgehammer and wheelbarring that stuff out to the curb, because that's where you had to put all the stuff you took out, whether the appliances, the towel, any refuge, you know, it was damaged or whatever. You just took to the curb. And big trucks would come around and get it when they could. But there was so much of that stuff there on the streets, it was even hard to get down some of those streets, because you just had enough room to get your vehicle through. And if it's another car coming, you know, you either had to stop, turn in a driveway somewhere, back up or something like that. And nails was a problem. I was lucky with Pack's truck. Never got a nail. I was hoping not to get any nails, because some of the ladies that was coming around pulling nails and stuff, and some of the other people getting nails. And there was even a tire shop there in Beaumont somewhere that was telling me that would fix your tires free, because there was just so many people getting nails. So if you had a nail in there, you know, just take it to them and they'd fix it. Anyway, I guess I was getting a little acclimatized, but then I wasn't too bad at the end of the day there. I couldn't say much for Mike, though. He was pretty well shot. And then on the 16th, I went back out to this Alan Sarah Davis's house, because I was working out there again. But what I done that time, I was talking to him in his garage. His house sat on a little rise, and his garage was over to the left, and it was a little lower. And when that water came through there, you just look at the outside of the house, you say, hey, there's no damage to this house. It was kind of a stucco house, you know. The rain and everything after the water went down was still raining, you know. It looked just like nothing there. But you look out the curb and see all the stuff that was taken out of that house, it was a different story. But his garage to the left is a regular type garage, you know, 8-foot doors or whatever. The water got clear of the ceiling in his garage. And he had motorcycles in there, all of his lawn equipment in there, another type vehicle, and a tractor. So I told him, I said, you know, I'll get some of this stuff running, you know. And he said, don't worry about the motorcycles. What he'd need the worst would be his pressure washer, and he had a water pump, and then there was also one of these big weed eaters you walk behind, you know. Anyway, I got four or five pieces running. The tractor I didn't get running, but I told him what he needed to get it. I think it's running, but if you don't get that water out of this stuff, when you take spark plug out, and then I think it was his son-in-law come by and took spark plug out of all them motorcycles that day, and when you cranked them, you know, it's shooting water out. Because it goes in the carburetor and all the intakes and stuff, and if you don't get it out of there, it's going to seize the engine up. So I worked all day on that and got some of it running. Okay, and then on Sunday, I was expecting to maybe, you know, take a little break, but after services, they said, we need 70 people this afternoon. So went out. And they had lists after sign up. I was getting ready to sign up, and David Finner said, no, wait a minute, wait until the people sign up here, and I'll put you where I think you need you. I said, that's fine. So signed up, got the address, went to another house. I think it was Terry and Cassandra Matthews. It was in a subdivision, real nice brick home. Same thing, water. You know, it had an upstairs okay, but, you know, same thing. Got to get all the tile out, all the flooring up, all the fixtures out, and sheetrock and insulation. So we got all that done on Sunday afternoon. Got that done. And this David Fenner never went to his house. And he's a deacon there, and he has this body shop there in Beaumont. And he's like some of the other members there. Several had Corvettes, but they was kidding him about the first thing he done was he got his Corvette and took it somewhere else. He was building a new house. It was completely done except for, like, putting doorknobs and a little bit of trim work. He had two houses. It flooded that his house he was living in and his new house. You know, devastated both of them. But he was out there working every day with DJ Bean, coordinating things, getting stuff done. It was a real effort by that congregation. Some of those people that owned those houses, this fellow I mentioned, Alan and Sarah Davis there, I didn't know he was an elder until I got this pamphlet. That's a house we worked busting all the floor out. And then I worked on some of his equipment. But, you know, the guy's same age as me. And he from there, daylight to dark. Of course, it's his place, but some of those people were. Matter of fact, there was a couple people that they was working at their house, they wouldn't even let them work. You know, they're just up in years and they wanted to work. And I think there was two, I think, they took to the emergency room. You know, one guy hurt his neck. He was an older gentleman, and another guy was, you know, having chest pains or whatever. So they're trying to, you know, take care of their members and get this work done and get it done for more damage. And, you know, everybody was appreciative and, you know, thanked me and my wife. And I told them it was a privilege to help these people. And also, the people that showed up from other areas. While I was there, they were people from, let's see, Portland, Oregon. And then on, I think it was the 16th when I was working on all the equipment there, there was a big group showed up around the Indianapolis area. And they come ready to work. They even had an electrician with them. And while I was there working on that house that was stucco, they had power to the house, but they didn't have anything turned on because the water had got all over the breaker box and electrical stuff. And this electrician, he borrowed a couple of tools off of me. And before they went to another house, he had electric on and going at this house. And the next house he went to, he got it up and going. Because, you know, that you got to clean those breakers and stuff if water gets in there, because it'll corrode. You get mud and so forth in there. So this crew that showed up from Indianapolis was a big crew. And then trying to think of who preaches at Shepherdsville now up there. He's come by here a few times. Trying to think of his name. I had it a while ago. Anyway, his son was there. David, can't think of the last name. That's bad. But anyway, another thing that I thought was coordinated well here, there was a lady there named Valerie, and she had a catering business. She's a member of that church. She catered every day to all those workers. She'd load up her van or truck with the food, go around to where everybody was working, and feed the workers. And one of the elders told me that she was an interesting story. She was an atheist. And I can't remember what member it was, kept talking to her, and she started coming to services. But she didn't obey the gospel until about 15 years later. 15 years later. But this one lady there just kept working on her. And, you know, she told me, you know, she was an atheist. But she's a member there, and has this catering business, and done a work and had everything coordinated there. Also, my wife done some work while we was there. She, I think she babysit. She swept and pulled nails, and she come out and served food one day at the houses we was working at. So it shows, you know, brotherly love there at this church. Everybody was so helpful. And, you know, I know some of them people were, you know, this one guy there, you know, he just was thinking, you know, I just ought to walk away from it. But there was so much help coordinated there to get his house up and back in shape. So I think it was a good work down there, and I think this church that we helped down there is a good one we helped. Of course, that's not to say others need help, and I know Mike delivered stuff and supplies over in the Crosby and Orange area. I know it was two places he went and delivered stuff. No. My wife took notes too, so I'm just going to read a few of her notes here that stood out to me. We stayed with a widow lady whose husband had been an elder there. She was so kind, opened her house to us. Earlier, she was letting a family stay, and the electric went out for 10 days, so they had to go somewhere else. This is right after, you know, the houses got flooded. She had some members come over and stay with her because she had a fairly large house. And then they had to go somewhere else because she lost power there. It was good to have a nice place to shower and sleep after working each day. We were prepared to sleep and eat in the truck if we needed to. About 40 families lost everything in their house, and some vehicles, and even their pets. Mike Thomas left from Beaver Dam and went to Crosby, where he grew up, and he came through Vider and made it to Beaumont Thursday night. He worked with us Friday cleaning out a house. And Sunday we were able to use classrooms after the morning service. One of the elders announced they needed anyone who could sign up and work. Didn't expect them to stop and come to evening service. There were people from Oregon, Indiana, Ohio, Tennessee, and of course Roman and Yuri was there when I first got there. They left on Friday, but I tell you, them guys were used to working. They done a lot of work. You're using a sledgehammer and, you know, you're in Roman. I think we're well appreciated also. Does anybody have any questions? You know, that it was surprising. It wasn't that bad. Now, I know the elders were talking about one place that they was going to have to go to, and it was pretty bad, you know. But I think that's what kind of helped, getting everything out before this mold could set in and getting all the stuff out to the curb, you know, that would spoil or whatever, you know. So that helped things. Now I'd like to focus on Nehemiah for a few minutes. Nehemiah was a cupbearer to the king. And I thought it'd be good to relate to this. This is what Ben Lee, he had a sermon Wednesday night on Nehemiah. So I thought I'd kind of like to relate some of it to you this evening. And if you begin in chapter 1, the last verse there, O Lord, I pray, please let me hear, be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who desire to fear your name, and let your servant prosper this day. I pray and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. Now, Nehemiah is one of those books. There's not a miracle in Nehemiah. But God answered prayer in Nehemiah. And, you know, some of the other old scripture writings in the Old Testament, you know, there's a lot of miracles recorded in there. But Nehemiah, there's no miracle recorded in Nehemiah. But God answered prayer in Nehemiah. And I'm going to read chapter 2 to you. And Nehemiah intercedes with Antirexus. And it came to pass in the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, that I took the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had never been sad in his presence before. Therefore the king said to me, why is your face sad, and since you are not sick? This is nothing but sorrow of the heart. So I became dreadfully afraid and said to the king, may the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies waste and its gates are burned with fire? Then the king said to me, what do you request? So I prayed to the God of heaven and said to the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor in your sight, I ask that you send me to Judea, to the city of my fathers, and the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it. Then the king said to me, the queen also sitting beside him, how long will your journey be, and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me, and I set a time. Furthermore, I said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given to me for the governors of the region beyond the river, that they must permit me to pass through till I come to Judea. And a letter of Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he must give me timber to make beams for the gates of the citadel, which pertains to the temple, for the city wall, for the house that I will occupy. And the king granted them to me according to the good hand of my God upon me. Then I went to the governors in the region beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent captains of the army and horsemen with me. When the Then the Sanballat, the Hornite, and the Tobiah, and the Amorite, official heard of it. They were deeply disturbed that a man had come to seek that well-being of the children of Israel. So I came to Jerusalem and was there 3 days. Then I rose in the night, and a few men with me. I told no one what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Nor was there any animal with me except the one which I rode. And I went out by night through the valley gate to the serpent wall and the refuse gate, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were burned with fire. Then I went on to the fountain gate and to the king's pool, but there was no room for the animal under me to pass. So I went up in the night by the valley and viewed the wall. I turned back and entered the valley gate, and so returned. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done. I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the others who did the work. Then I said to them, "You see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lies waste and the gates are burned with fire. Come and let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be a reproach." And I told them of the hand of my God, which had been good upon me, and also the king's word that he had spoken to me. So they said, "Let us rise up and build." Then they set their hands to this good work. So that's good to know. If we're in distress, we can always go to God in prayer. And those people in Beaumont, you know, they were in a lot of stress. Some of those people, you know, had to get another place to stay. And Mike was going to rent a car there in Beaumont, but there wasn't a car rental to be had within 100 miles of Beaumont. In other words, about 100 miles away, you could get a rental car. There were so many cars that were flooded and damaged by the flood, all the cars were rented. And he had a little tough time getting back to see his mom in Austin. I told him, I said, "Well, just rent a small U-Haul." And he went to the place where he turned that big U-Haul in. And there was supposed to be one there, never did show up. So he went to Vider, there's supposed to be one there, and it was closed, the U-Haul place. So one of the members at Crosby came and picked him up, and he got borrowed one of the members' cars there and went to see his mom in Austin. But we're a blessed people. When a tragedy strikes, like those hurricanes and people, you can rely on people to help you. You know, some of those people showed up down there. They didn't know they were coming. They knew, I think, about the Oregon group because they'd come and stop somewhere else before they come to Beaumont. And also the one from Indiana, I think they knew about them. But, you know, some of those people showed up that they didn't know they were coming. And these David Fenner and this DJ Bean, they had the work lined up to get done. And that's what it takes to get something like that done. Take care of the physical needs, but they were taking care of the spiritual needs also. And it's good to be in God's family. It's good to be in God's family. And when in distress, God will answer your prayers. Tonight, won't you come into God's family and enjoy His blessings? Become a Christian tonight. Or if you have any other need, come and let it be known. So I plead with you, if you're not a Christian, become a Christian. Enjoy God's blessings. Be edified and strengthened. Bruce, the invitation.